everyone. Good morning and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is Nick Wright. Brian Westbrook is joining us this morning. Good morning,
Brian. Good morning.
Brian.
We're matching again.
Well, that's how we do it here.
It is always a great day to have Brian Westbrook. It is particularly today. I was just scrolling my Twitter feed. I'm like, oh, they're talking about Brian Westbrook. Oh, that person's talking about Brian Westbrook. Your name was all in people's mouths yesterday, Brian. I'm excited to have you
here. How did I get involved in that? That's just the biggest question.
Sitting at your palatial estate in Brooklyn, minding your own business.
Waiting for Zion to come on and boom.
So I mean, like, I'm getting drawn into this old stuff again, so we'll get into that today.
That plus, by this time next week, Nick's Miami tan will be just settling in.
Oh, that's a fact.
We will
be gearing
up
in a casino
for Super Bowl 54.
I don't know.
We got so much great football to get to that only one thing could derail that just for a bit, and that is the one thing these guys were talking about, the debut of 19-year-old phenom, first overall pick, projected superstar. Zion Williamson. Pelicans hosting the Spurs last night, and after a very quiet first three quarters, Zion figured it out all in the fourth. He scored 17 straight points during a three-minute span, including going 4 for 4 from deep. Zion finished with 22 points and 7 boards in just 18 minutes of action. Pelicans lose, but that future is bright in New Orleans. Here is Zion after an electric debut.
It was everything I dreamed of, except for the losing part. Just the energy the crowd brought, the energy the city brought. It was electric, and you know, I'm just grateful that they did that.
How relieved are you just to get this over with, and now you can go to some level of normalcy?
Man,
it's not going to be normal, fam. This is going to be normal. This is going to be normal, bro. The way he played is something that he can do every day. Honestly, we're here to obviously help him and for him to contribute to us and help us out too. But again, I feel like with him being back, he's waited a long time for this and he's really excited to play. Speaking for Zion, I mean.
I like him. He's cute and he's humble. And I know it's the very, very beginning. And there's a part of you that hopes he always sort of stays a little bit naive. But you don't know. Nick, do you think Zion exceeded expectations in his debut last night?
Oh, given the minutes restriction, he did as well as you possibly could have done. The greatest of athletes, and Brian can speak to this from experience, me just from observation, can feel the moment and channel something a little extra special. And Zion, after being out of basketball for a few months, you don't have to be a great athlete to know this, anyone that's played basketball at any level knows the way he was playing, where it's 3 or 4 minutes in, then to the bench, impossible to get a rhythm. It is impossible. If you've been a starter your whole life, if you've been a big-time player your whole life, what they were asking him to do, once I saw how the minutes restriction was going to go, it's not that they're going to let him play a 9-minute chunk in the first half consecutively and a 9-minute, they're going to go 4 minutes. I was not surprised at all that the first three quarters went the way they did, with him turning the ball over, being a little uneasy, not being able to find a groove. It would be like, I imagine, a running back that's used to getting 25 to 30 carries being like, you're going to get 8 carries, you're not going to know when you're going to get them. And so I didn't think we were going to get this, but I shouldn't have doubted him. Because he is a phenom. He's not just phenomenal, he is a phenom. And what he did was, after playing in this game for three quarters, seeing what San Antonio was doing, seeing what his team needed, he, in his first game ever as a pro, did something that former number one overall pick Ben Simmons to this day refuses to do. Did something that it took Giannis 4 years to figure out that he could do it and really didn't figure it out until this year. Man, if you don't dare me to shoot, I'm going to shoot. And because he was injured, he said he spent a lot of time working on that set, kind of flat shot. And what he did was, in his first game ever, put his team on his back, pull them back into the basketball game, and if he was allowed to play longer, they would have won that game. He would have scored easily 25 points in the fourth quarter of a close game if he didn't have the minutes restriction. It was the exact way a player who I believe is going to be an all-time great, his career should begin, with an all-time great debut.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because my whole thought when I watched the game was that, you know, coming into the game, I said, it's going to be very interesting to see how they integrate him into the basketball game. And really, early on, they didn't call any plays for him. They try to make him get his points off the board, just find a way, just float around offensively. Then in the fourth quarter, he was like, okay, this is enough. I'm going to take advantage. And you're right. That's what superstars do. They say, it's my time to shine, and now I need to do everything to help my team win. That's that clutch gene that everybody wants the superstars actually have. The one thing I love about this team coached by Alvin Gentry is that you have, usually when you have the number one player, you go to the worst team and you just got to try to find a way. LeBron in Cleveland, they just not about a lot of very good players around him, and LeBron had to carry this basketball team. But this team, the Ingram can score. He's a consistent scorer. Jrue Holiday, Lonzo Ball can handle the ball, get great shots for everyone. Zion doesn't have to come in and carry the basketball team. That's probably the best thing for him as a rookie. You know you're going to be a superstar. I don't have to come in and do everything right away. That's going to be a great thing as far as the longevity of his career.
Well, and this is, and I think this is the smarts of David Griffin and Alvin Gentry, and I don't know how many people noticed this, but in the introductions, in the NBA, the star of the team is introduced last, mm-hmm. and if there's two stars, the second best player goes first. They introduced Brandon Ingram first. They introduced Jrue Holiday last. They kept what they've been doing. Zion was introduced second. You might say, why does that matter? It matters for the same reason that he went to the podium with Jrue, and that Jrue, a veteran, a very underrated player in this league, said, hey, man, this is going to be normal for you. This is going to be every night for the next 15 years. Get used to it. What the scrutiny, the intensity, the eyeballs on you. So they know he's going to have to deal with that, but they're not upping the ante with it by, they're not, no. Listen, Ingram's having a great season. Jrue Holiday's our best player right now. You're one of the guys who's a starter and nothing more, at least in that. And I think that's smart because he's, Jenna, you mentioned you hope he keeps the naivete to a degree. He almost assuredly won't because he's going to grow up and we all grow out of it to a degree. But he's a kid.
Yeah.
He's younger than my son, who is right now, I wonder how someone 5 years older than Zion should deal with this type of moment. And he's dealt with it as well as you possibly can, including saying to Gentry, coach, we can win this game, leave me in. And credit to the Pelicans, they did the right thing. You got to think about the 15-year window for his career and taking him out. But I thought it was great. I thought it was awesome to see. I thought it was great.
One of the biggest things, and we talk about Zion, you really compare him to Ben Simmons' first overall pick as well, the fear of failure. To me, the fear of failure has kept Ben from shooting those jump shots and kept him from saying, I don't want to shoot anything outside of the lane. In Zion's first game, he said, listen, coming into the NBA, the question was my jump shot, my ability to shoot the three. He's willing to step up, lining up 4-for-4 from the three-point line. That was impressive.
You talked about the eye test. I'm just curious because we hadn't really seen him in the last couple of weeks. How did he look to you physically? We worried about his weight and what would happen if he wasn't playing every day. How did he look to you, eye test?
I don't think his weight's any bigger than it was. Now, if people want to argue that he needs to get smaller than he was in college, I don't think he's really done that to a degree. He looked like winded. After his first 4 minutes, he looked winded. I don't think that's because he hasn't been training. I think that's just because you haven't been playing in NBA games. But I think, Brian, the eye test of that he was not afraid to do the thing that he is worst at on the court. In fact, both those things. He was a willing passer early. He's not a great passer. And you saw it in the turnovers, but he was trying to defer. He was trying to do the right thing. And he is not a knockdown shooter. But it was, to, you know, one of my favorite phrases, the right basketball play. If they're going to go under screens and dare you to shoot, the lane's going to be too clogged. So put them up. And if you're making them, keep putting them up. And it is, his comps are, you know, Blake Griffin as far as when he came into the league. Man, it took years for Blake to start shooting three-pointers. We've talked to Blake about how he had to reinvent it. I'm not acting like Brian Zion's going to be a knockdown shooter, but that he will be a willing shooter if they dare him to shoot. That is going to open things up for him and for everyone on this team. It was, after a preseason, remember, where he averaged, what did he do in the preseason? 23 in 27 minutes a game on 71% from the field. First game ever, 22 in 18 minutes on 72% from the field.
And by the way, Zion had never hit more than 3 three-pointers in a game at Duke. He hits 4 last night in 3 minutes of play. So he's off to a great start. It's hard to believe Patrick Mahomes is only 24 years old. He's already won a league MVP. He took his Chiefs to an AFC championship in his first year as a starter last season. And then he followed it up this year by carrying Kansas City to their first Super Bowl in 50 years. But the bar is high for Mahomes, who knows that just getting to Miami isn't nearly enough.
I think the mentality of these guys in this locker room is that we want to get the big one. We want to not fall short. We want to make sure that we're going to Super Bowl and that we can win it and not regret not preparing or doing whatever it takes to do that. And I think as with the guys in this locker room, we're going to take advantage of every single day. It's a long build for these next week and a half or whatever it is, but we're going to build every single day of just taking advantage of it and hopefully getting there and playing our best football and trying to find a way to win the football game.
You know, it's interesting, Nick, the bar for the Chiefs is high. The bar for Chiefs fans and media members is high, too. Would this be a season of disappointment for the Chiefs if they didn't win the Super Bowl? And we were so excited they got here.
It wouldn't be a failure, and I'm glad you're not. It certainly wouldn't be a failure. Season's already been a success. Would it be a disappointment? Yeah, I think they'd be disappointed because it would be two straight years where they were good enough to win a championship and don't get it done. And you have to see how the game plays out. It doesn't necessarily mean someone failed. Doesn't necessarily mean someone didn't do their job. Sometimes you get beat by the better team. And San Francisco, by the way, checks every box to be the better team, except for the one involving throwing the football and Patrick Mahomes. But I think back to last year, and obviously, listen, the entirety of Chiefs history changed once Patrick Mahomes became the starting quarterback. They went 30 years, not without a playoff appearance, not without a single win started by a quarterback they drafted. Mm-hmm. 30 years. It went from Todd Blackledge to Patrick Mahomes. As that gap of time as far as just recycling other teams' quarterbacks. But last year they were good enough. And last year Patrick Mahomes, the second to last time he touched the ball in the AFC Championship game, the Chiefs had the lead. Then the final time he touched the ball in the final 10 seconds of the game, he had driven his team in field goal range in less than 30 seconds to tie the game, and he never touched the ball again. This year in the playoffs, according to Pro Football Focus, he's having the greatest playoff run up to this point in documented statistical history. He's the most important player, the best player in the sport. If you have that guy, and here's another key point to it, Brian, the Chiefs, and the Niners as well, actually, surprisingly healthy. At this point of the season, neither team has a key player that helped get them here. The Chiefs without rookie safety Juan Thornhill. The Niners probably going to be without Tevin Coleman. That's it. That's as healthy as you can possibly be. You know, in your guys' Super Bowl, I mean, T.O. came back, but he was obviously hampered. Teams are always injured at this point of the season. So, yeah, I'd be disappointed. I think they'd be disappointed. And I think Andy knows you only get so many. You might think you're going to get a bunch of bites at this apple, but it's not guaranteed. So, not a failure, but yeah, it'd be a disappointment because they're the best team and they have the best player.
I think it would be a huge disappointment, especially if you're Andy Reid. He understands better than anyone, and I understand it too, because in 2004, we went to the Super Bowl. We thought we had the best team in the NFL. We ended up losing to the Patriots, and you just figure, next year, we'll go back and do it again. We'll repeat. We'll just have an opportunity to go win it again.
Same thing as Dolphins. Dan Marino thought.
And it never happened for me. And so when you have a team, every single year, the locker room changes just a little bit. Most of the time, the main players in the locker room will stay there. But there are always new pieces. And you never know how that new piece, that loss or that addition can change your locker room with your players as well as your coaching staff. And so, of course, the window is small. And you're right. There are not very many years in the NFL where your team is going to be relatively healthy. There can be Patrick Mahomes can be hurt next year. That changes things for the Chiefs.
He got hurt this year. I was sitting right here on the show the next day, and I thought we weren't going to see him again this season. And I also thought, because this does happen, that, well, will he ever be the exact same player? If he suffered a major knee injury and needs major surgery, was that a fork in the road moment for his career? And because it's football, you run that risk every play of every game. So if you have these types of opportunities and you don't cash them in, it's got to be create the angst that you think about 15 years later.
But just think how good this defense has played for the last half of the season. No one saw that coming. If you're talking about the first half of the season, this defense has played much better. Does that happen against next year? We don't know.
does Lamar lose to the Patriots? You know, do the Ravens get better? Do the Niners get better? You know, you haven't paid Patrick Mahomes yet. Can you still keep this team intact? Can you still sort of keep the core together? I think that we forget how, and I think you made a good point of this. I mean, Jeannie talks about it all the time. How hard is it to return and get back to where you were
when
you
weren't,
especially for a guy that wants to win so badly?
Extremely hard. Tyreek Hill has been out with injury. He's a big part of that thing. Travis Kelce is getting older. At some point, they'll have to find a running back. There's a lot of different things that go into winning a Super Bowl, at least to getting to this point, the Super Bowl game. That doesn't happen every single year. Andy Reid knows it better than anyone. Patrick Mahomes, just think about this. Aaron Rodgers, 2010 yeah. Super Bowl winner. Best quarterback in the league. A lot of people argue he's the best thrower of the football for a very long time. He hasn't been back. He hasn't won that game
the next
again.
Year, the next year they went 15-1. He was the unanimous league MVP. Yep. And they didn't win a playoff game.
That's it.
And they've only been even back to the conference championship game three times. And two of those times they were annihilated. One time they lost in heartbreaking fashion. It's so different than the sport we were just talking about, basketball, where if you have the best player, if you have this quality of team, you know you're going to be in the Final Four at least, and one bad day can't ruin you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? One bad turn of luck, aside from a devastating injury, can't ruin you. With all that said, because I do know it's hard, and I do know you don't start where you finished all of it, whether the Chiefs win or lose in 9 days, 10 days, I don't think there is a single fan base in the NFL with more reason for optimism for the next, call it, 5 to 8 year window than the Chiefs. I don't think there is a team in the league that has a brighter short-term future than Kansas City. If there is, I'll listen to the candidates, but I can't think of them. The Ravens look really, really good,
yeah.
But the big yeah but with them is we do need to see Lamar, even if they lose in the playoffs, have a really good or regular season Lamar playoff game. There's not that question.
You have to take the 49ers probably.
The 49ers, I think you feel good about them, but you also with the Niners, I think one of the concerns is their biggest weakness, at least to me, is the most important player on their team and their quarterback. I don't think as a Chiefs fan, there's not a fan base that I look to and say, man, I wonder what it'd be like to be them. I feel like that's how fan bases are looking to the team with the 24-year-old best player in the league. So I do expect the Chiefs to be in it for years to come, but it is not the Super Bowl. It is in the conversation. They are in the Super Bowl right now. And Jenna's point, what did Dolphins fan think in 1983? Yeah. We're going to be back here year
we
after year.
We have this
year.
Guy. There's
we
no way
we
won't be back.
How do we not? And they never got back. I don't think that's going to happen to Kansas City, but that is the nature of the NFL.
Will it be disappointing if they don't win the Super Bowl? There's 32 teams every single year to say our goal is to win the conference championship and to win the Super Bowl. Will they be disappointed? Absolutely. Do they have a lot of things to look forward to in the future? Absolutely, as long as you have Patrick Mahomes as your quarterback.
TurboTax is here to help this tax season by making tax filing easier for you. They've made it their mission to give you all the tools and advice you need to get your taxes done with confidence, like making uploading your W-2 as easy as taking a picture. Just use your phone or tablet to simply snap a picture of your W-2, then watch your information appear in the right place in your tax return. You can be sure you're filing your taxes correctly while at the same time making sure you're getting the best possible refund. TurboTax, all people are tax people.
To the 49ers now. Jimmy Garoppolo has a pretty manageable to-do list for next week's Super Bowl. One, keep pace with reigning MVP Patrick Mahomes. Two, we'll see number one. Mahomes is running a high-powered Chiefs offense that can score at will. The one thing Jimmy G has on his side, though, statistics. He's got the highest passer rating in the NFL when his team is trailing by a touchdown. Nick, do you trust Garoppolo if Super Bowl 54 comes down to him?
No, I
good
don't.
Talk.
And no, I don't. I found usually I'm pretty good. I'm pretty good at understanding where the pulse of a conversation is, even if I'm askew from it. There's very often the mainstream thought is one place and I'm somewhere else, but I'm usually aware of it. I thought, in general, everyone was in somewhat lockstep on Jimmy Garoppolo. I found out earlier this week that is not the case. I thought everyone understood Jimmy Garoppolo is fine. He's fine. He's a quarterback in, at the most ideal situation a quarterback can be in, which is, I think he's got the single best play caller in football. He has a dominant offensive line. He has a great defense that very often puts him in a best position to be playing from ahead. And he's got a running game behind him that is a triple threat that is terrifying to go along with a do-everything tight end. Like, there is, I know he doesn't have a superstar wide receiver. He's got a fine receiving core on the outside, and he is asked to not screw it up for his team. And by the way, quite often this year, they were 13-3, but quite often this year, when the one thing they're asking him not to do is don't turn the ball over, Jimmy, he found a way to turn the ball over. Only Baker and Jameis had more games with a pick. Only Baker and Jameis had more games with an interception. So let's be very clear on this. If Jimmy Garoppolo's way better than I'm saying he is, then the Chiefs can't win. Like, the Niners have a better defensive line. Mm-hmm. They have way better linebackers. They have a better secondary. They have a better offensive line. They have way better running backs. I would say coaching and tight ends are a push. The Chiefs have a way better quarterback and better, considerably better wide receivers. If the Niners can even play them anywhere close to even in the passing game, then where the hell do the Chiefs get an advantage? Nowhere. Why are the Chiefs a favorite? Well, it's slightest of favorites, but a favorite. Why are the Chiefs even considered to have a chance? Because you do the tail of the tape and you say one team has an advantage everywhere except a massive disadvantage in the passing game. I thought that's what everyone believed. I know it's what I believe. And so, no, like, if this becomes a Jimmy Garoppolo game, then the Chiefs win the Super Bowl flatly. That's where I'm at on this. And I think the Niners desperately will try to avoid this becoming a Jimmy Garoppolo game.
If you're the 49ers, you're right. They don't want it to become that type of game. That means the running game isn't working. And also, that means their defense isn't getting to Patrick Mahomes because now he's throwing touchdowns on the other side. Because offensively, you're saying, we're going to stick with the running game if you're the 49ers until they stop it. And if they stop it, that means that now Jimmy G comes into effect. Here's the one thing that I would say about Jimmy G and my confidence in him. I don't have as much confidence in him. However, I have a bunch of confidence in Kyle Shanahan and his ability to scheme guys open, yes, to use shifts and motions to try to get good and easy throws for Jimmy G. That's one thing that I have a bunch of confidence in. And so even though I'm not as confident in Jimmy G, I think Kyle Shanahan is one, and Andy Reid on the other side of the ball is probably just as good, but he's one of the best in the league at scheming guys open.
And I think so, they're the two best in football.
There's no doubt about it. So when you think about it, I don't necessarily know that for the 49ers to win, I need to have supreme confidence in Jimmy G.
Agreed.
My belief is that Kyle Shanahan, as a coach and coordinator, can find a way to scheme things and make them easier for Jimmy G, as long as that running game isn't working.
But they don't lose the games. They don't lose a ton of games, even the ones he turns the ball over in. They somehow still find a way to work around that and win. Doesn't that kind of give him the confidence to know that he could still go out there, take some chances? They're not losing those games.
Well, yeah, but he's never played in a Super Bowl before, and he's played in two playoff games. The first playoff game, he played poorly, and they took the ball out of his hands. The second playoff game, he almost threw a pick to Kenny King, and they said, or Kevin King, pardon me, and they said, okay, you don't get to throw anymore. You do not get to throw anymore, Jimmy. Thank you for coming today. We are taking the ball out of your hands. Nobody has thrown fewer passes in a playoff win since the early 1970s.
Was that Kyle saying, you know what, we got to go back to my bread and butter, or saying, I don't want to deal with Jimmy anymore? Because to me, that was a little bit of the pass being almost intercepted, but also much more of Kyle saying, I don't want to put myself in the same situation that I was in against the Patriots a couple years
ago. Absolutely, and they were gashing the Packers on the ground. Like, the reason you pass instead of run is because you can get 7.5 yards per pass attempt instead of 3.5 or 4 yards per running attempt. But when you're getting 7 yards per rushing attempt, might as well keep running it. So I understand. It wasn't just we're terrified of Jimmy G. It was, why would we go away from what's working? But how would you feel about this game if Kirk Cousins were the Niners quarterback? To me, it's about the same. These guys are very similar in that they're not bad quarterbacks. They're not someone that you have to work your entire game plan around preventing them from being a part of it. But they are not going to propel you to the next level. And why did I bring up Kirk Cousins? Because all these somewhat gaudy numbers we've seen from Jimmy Garoppolo, we saw from Kirk Cousins in Washington. When who was there? Someone remind me. Oh, Kyle Shanahan. Like, Kyle Shanahan, Matt Ryan's a good to very good player. He quarterbacked a top 8 all-time scoring offense and won league MVP when Kyle Shanahan was there. So I just think that if this becomes a Jimmy Garoppolo versus Patrick Mahomes duel, then congrats. My hometown team won the Super Bowl. Like, they can't win that game. And I know Niner fans will say, oh, Nick, you must not have watched the Saints game. I did watch the Saints game. You know why everyone remembers it? Because it's the outlier event. Because it is the one game this season where it's like, wow, against a quality team, Jimmy had to get in a duel, and he did it. But I don't think that's duplicable, and I don't think it's sustainable.
This is the problem. He convinces me, and then I go out into the world, and then
And Jenna's like, everyone disagrees with you. Okay, we'll see you in 10 days.
On to the Eagles now. For some former Eagles, this time of year brings back some bad memories. Following their Super Bowl 39 loss to the Patriots, many speculated Donovan McNabb and Terrell Owens would be right back on the big stage. But you remember that offseason? Finger-pointing, blame, turmoil, and a T.O. driveway press conference? The Eagles didn't even make the playoffs the next year. And Donovan McNabb knows why.
That was something that kind of broke us up. That was the most frustrating for me because I knew what we could do, and if we decided to just come together, what we'd be able to accomplish.
Are you and T on talking terms, or what's the relationship like now?
Hey, I give a nice peace sign and keep it moving. I respect his time. I love my time. You know, and there's no need for me to try to dust off anything that happened in the past, because what was in the past is in the past.
Well, that ignited this. T.O. responding to the clip by tweeting, "Oh, expletive, I can't wait to tell my story. I'm bringing popcorn, I'm doing sit-ups, I'm gonna eat a couple cans of chunky soup. This guy's a joke, talking about I broke up the Eagles. Did you tell him that you vouched for the Eagles to pay Westbrook, but what? Not me? It's on."
Oh, what?
Well, lucky us, what? Because the aforementioned Westbrook is sitting to my right.
I thought he was talking about Russell Westbrook.
Now I'm really excited. All right.
This makes it even more convenient.
Absolutely.
What was your reaction to how all that went down?
Well, first of all, and listen, these are two guys, and I love Donovan. I've known him for a very long time, and T.O. is a really good friend of mine as well. So to see these guys still feuding about something that happened in 2004, 2005, to me, it's disappointing because I thought they had moved way past this years ago, and I think for it to continue to come up, it's just disappointing to see two of my guys that I respect and two of the best players I've ever played with still arguing about whose fault it is and things like that. Here's my opinion, quite honestly. I think that T.O. signed a contract before he came to Philadelphia his last year in San Francisco. He wanted that thing to be guaranteed the last couple years in Philadelphia. And Joe Banner had the opportunity to say, okay, T.O., you broke your leg, you came back, you played in the Super Bowl, and you balled out. You were the best wide receiver in the game all year long. We're going to just guarantee the last 2 years. We don't have to fight about it. We won't have to discuss anything. And at that point, Donovan doesn't have to go vouch for this guy and that guy. And, you know, I think if I'm Donovan, you know, he probably felt, well, you see T.O.'s work. You've seen what he's done. Why does anybody need to vouch for him? His word, Donovan's word, wouldn't have helped T.O. at all. The stats, the numbers say everything that you need to see. He was the best receiver in the game. They should have guaranteed the contract, and I think that's the one thing that T.O. was waiting for. Joe Banner didn't do that. So me, I don't put blame on Donovan for that. I put more blame on Joe Banner for not guaranteeing the last 2 years, because we had a great nucleus of guys. We talked about how small the window is when we talked about Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid. Those windows close very quickly. You have to make the most of your team. We had a great team, and to that same thought, I thought we were there in the Super Bowl in 04. We just returned the next year. A lot of crazy things happened. We didn't go back to the NFC Championship game back to until 08.
But here's the other thing I'll say, and obviously you've lived it. You're the expert. This is me watching from afar. And I know T.O. I've talked with T.O. on and off the air. I thought T.O. having to wait on the Hall of Fame was a travesty.
It's a joke.
I think he is, by any measure, one of the five greatest receivers of all time. By any measure. And you could argue even higher than that, right?
I would say top three in my mind.
You certainly could make that argument. And so I have total respect for what he accomplished on the field. But if I'm the quarterback of a team, and there is someone that I need to vouch for, whether it will help or not, it is not just about production. It is about, what is your track record? What is your history? How good of a teammate you are? When you leave here eventually, are you going to start crushing folks, as is your history? It is a no-brainer I vouch for Brian Westbrook over Terrell Owens. This is, there is a reason that certain guys continue on a path of why is everyone against me? And certain guys continue everywhere they go to be, oh my God, I didn't know Brian. I didn't know Brian a year ago.
Right.
And now if someone asks me about him, I'm like, oh, I mean, that is a great dude. It's a pleasure to be around, reliable, all these things. And so there has been, and I know he'll get mad, but it's the truth. And I tell him this, a lack of self-awareness for Terrell Owens. Sometimes the whole world's against you, but sometimes you bring some of it on yourself.
And sometimes that line gets cloudy because you keep putting it out there that the whole world is against you and people start seeing.
I happen to think, maybe I'm wrong, if his exit in San Francisco was a little different and if the way, because nobody questioned how tough he is or how great of a player he was, if he comported himself a little bit different, if they would have been more willing to guarantee that money. Because of course it came down to money. It always comes down to money. Especially when you play in a Super Bowl on a broken damn leg and you play great and you say, I put myself out there for risk with no money guaranteed, now guarantee it. I get why he was angry about it, but as is often the case, he turned to me, Brian, a rightful gripe into something where he turns into the bad guy because of how he responded to it. And this is another instance. Donovan didn't have to say the things he said, right, but they weren't out of bounds. But then T.O. comes over with an over-the-top hammer, not just the tweet with your name, but other tweets involved. And again, we're talking about, why is he acting like this?
I hate seeing these guys. Again, I love these guys. I hate seeing them do that, especially over Twitter. These guys see each other from time to time at Super Bowls, at different events. They certainly have the opportunity to kind of clear the air, and I thought it was clear. I just wish they can come back together because, again, we're talking about two of the best players in Philadelphia Eagles history, and now they're feuding over on Twitter. That just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, but do you think it's going to happen?
No, it won't. It won't. It won't happen. But it should. I'll tell you what, one of the most disappointing things in my career as a player is that I wasn't old enough and mature enough to bring two guys that I know we needed to be successful together. And, you know, it was a point. I love T and I love Don. I couldn't bring them together for the success of our team. That's one of the biggest failures that I had in my career as a player. I wasn't old enough, wasn't mature enough at the time.
Well, thanks for sharing that. Here, first things first, we are just barely by about that much joined by Super Bowl champ
what
Chris
up,
Canty.
What's up, man?
So we just peel back the curtain for a second. He sat down, no joke, about a fraction of a second before we
Which
came back on
Which has never
camera.
Happened. Candy's been on the show 300 times.
Right.
It's never been anything but early.
Is it a good story?
Yeah, because I'm usually on Tom Coughlin time, right?
Yeah.
You got to be five minutes early in order to be on time.
Yep. Yeah.
If you're on time, you're actually late.
Yeah.
But I can blame the George Washington Bridge for that this morning.
Well, see, there you go. I
got it. It ain't going to happen when you get that penthouse in the city you've been talking about, bro. Come on.
There you go, man.
I'm just telling you, it's just another reason. Come on, move
Listen,
into
man,
town.
I'm just like George and Weezy. I want to move up to that deluxe apartment in the sky.
Yeah.
Canty, let's talk about your guy. After 16 seasons, 2 Super Bowl wins, 2 Super Bowl MVPs, Eli Manning has decided to hang up the cleats. The Giants quarterback will hold a press conference tomorrow to officially announce his retirement. The 39-year-old steps away, holding almost every passing record in team history. Canty, you played 4 seasons with Eli. You won your Super Bowl 46 ring with Eli. Is he a Hall of Famer?
There's no question in my mind he's a Hall of Famer, Jenna. And I know a lot of people will point to the iconic moments that he had in Super Bowl 42 and Super Bowl 46, the throw to David Tyree, the helmet catch, which set up the Plaxico Burress go-ahead touchdown, and then, of course, the throw to Mario Manningham in Super Bowl 46 right along the sideline in between 2 Patriots defensive backs. I mean, B-Dub, you played in the league a long time. You know how hard it is to drop that ball into the receiver under those circumstances with that amount of pressure. But Eli Manning has always been able to deliver, especially when the lights are the brightest and the pressure is the greatest. And to me, competitive greatness has to account for something. You look at those 2 Super Bowl runs. I mean, those were awesome runs. He was on the road for all of the games during the Super Bowl 42 run, on the road for 3 of the 4 games in Super Bowl 46. Everybody looks at those big moments in the Super Bowl. But if you go back to 2011, and you look at the NFC Championship game where Eli Manning took an absolute beating against the San Francisco 49ers. I think they sacked him 6 times, over 20 pressures, but he had over 30 completions in that game. And of course, he delivered when it mattered the most. So for me, you can look at the metrics, and Eli Manning is in top 10 of a lot of statistical categories as far as passing goes. But when you actually look at what he did and what he meant for the Giants organization, I mean, you'd be hard pressed to find anybody that did it better.
What was he like as a teammate?
Well, I mean, he was the consummate professional. I mean, he was, and I know it's cliche, but he was the first one in the building, last one to leave, and he went about his business in a very workmanlike fashion. You had no choice but to respect Eli and how he went about doing what he does. But the thing about it that makes it special is just the level of consistency, because he was the same guy every day. And especially when you talk about a city like New York, when you're under a microscope and there's a lot of scrutiny. Whether he played well, whether he played bad, he was steady. And I think that that gave the team, I guess, that ability to be consistent. And I think that's a special characteristic, especially playing in this town.
The people that would say that Eli's not a Hall of Famer will say that he was never the best at his position. His best five-year span, 11 through 15, he ranked 19th in passer rating, 20th in completion, and 15th in wins. However, when I look at Eli, I look at the totality of his career. I say playing 16 years and putting up the type of numbers over 50,000 yards, over 300 touchdowns, those are Hall of Fame numbers. Those are Hall of Fame credentials. And being able to play, and you mentioned it, being able to play in certain cities with the type of media scrutiny that you get here in New York, it's just hard to do, especially with some of the teams, the ups and downs that you've had in this city. So I certainly think that Eli is a Hall of Famer. But you made a point, and I think people need to understand this. The ability to play at a high level for a long time is just hard. There's not very many people that can say, I'm going to come to work every single day and I'm going to be the best every single day. Eli was never quite the best. However, he was consistent, to your point, then his entire career. He was very good. And I think because of that, he should be rewarded with the Hall of Fame.
Never missed a game due to injury.
Impressive.
The Iron Man streak that was prematurely ended with the Geno Smith start a few years ago by McAdoo is a part of the resume as well. I'm going to approach this from a slightly different angle because I knew this question was coming as soon as it came out yesterday, the retirement was coming. And I take these things probably more seriously than I should. And Eli is, I've said before on the show, you can make as strong of a case for as you can against. So, but I wanted to really like dive into it and figure out how do I really feel? And I'm not going to use the 50,000 passing yards. I'm not going to use the top 10 in touchdowns or top five, all those things, because I think the statistical argument in its totality actually works against him a bit, because never first team all pro, no MVP, you know what I mean? Never had statistically regular season stats. He was a good quarterback, not a great quarterback. So how do you overcome that and become a Hall of Famer? With two of the most iconic, not games, but to your point, runs in playoff history. And that is the part that to me was the final check mark in the, you know what? Eli Manning is a Hall of Famer in my mind, because it's not just that he beat the 18-0 Patriots. It's that 2 rounds prior, he knocked out the best Tony Romo team we ever saw, the 13-3 Dallas Cowboys. You were on that team. The round after that, he knocked out Brett Favre's Green Bay Packers, the last time Favre had a chance to win or go to a Super Bowl with the Packers, the 13-3 Packers, and then the 18-0 Patriots. On that playoff run, he had 6 touchdowns, 1 pick, and a 96 rating. And then 4 years later, what was the route? You guys knocked out the 15-1 Packers, unanimous MVP Aaron Rodgers. Then you knock out a dominant 13-3 San Francisco 49er team in a game, like you said, he got whooped in. Mm-hmm. He got beat up in. En route to beating the 13-3 Patriots on that playoff run. 9 touchdowns, 1 pick, a 103 rating. And I think it's very telling. Eli and his brother both have 2 rings. Everyone knows Peyton's one of the all-time greats. But en route to those rings, how did they play? En route to those championships, who was better? Because when we talk about those Super Bowls, we say, oh, Uri's defensive line. That's Eli, his 8 playoff games the years they won the Super Bowl. 15 touchdowns, 2 picks, 100 rating. That's Peyton, the 2 years he won the Super Bowl. It's not just the Broncos year. That includes his Super Bowl with the Colts. 5 touchdowns, 8 picks, a 72 rating. He was, as great as he was in the playoff run, he was along for the ride. Eli, once the playoffs began, those 2 years, and maybe the only 2 moments of his career, he was the best guy. He was as great as your guys' D-line was, as great as those things were. He was the driving offensive force. And if you're going to overcome, to me, what is a good but not great regular season career, you have to be able to have that up there. Twice, I was nails in the biggest moments, and I didn't get an easy path. I was against 13-3, 13-3, 15-1, 13-3, and he did it. So I'm surprised I'm saying it, but after looking into it, I think he's got to be a Hall of Famer, can't he?
The other thing that he has as a feather in his cap is that he has 2 Super Bowl MVPs. Yeah. Ain't a whole lot of guys walking around with multiple Super Bowl MVPs. 1 of 5, and if you look at the majority of those guys on that list, they in Canton. So, I mean, it seems like it's inevitable that Eli Manning will be putting on a gold jacket.
All right, quickly, does his career record bother you guys that he finishes
the again, the 170-117, the lack of MVPs, lack of all pros, all that works against him. You have to have a giant trump card to overcome it.
And that's
I think those 2 Super Bowl runs, not just beating the Patriots, the teams you had to beat on the road in order to get them, I think
playing in New York helps him too a little
bit. Do you see what I'm saying? He makes such a case. I'm always convinced after Nick speaks.
He's a lawyer part
time. Good. He's a great lawyer. Kenny, would this season be a disappointment for Mahomes and the Chiefs if they don't win the Super Bowl?
Oh, absolutely, Jenna. It'll absolutely be a disappointment, and it's not to take anything away from what the Chiefs have accomplished this year. I mean, I think that they're just opening up their window because Pat Mahomes is only in his second full season as a starter, but to have the opportunity to advance past the conference championship and actually get to the Super Bowl, that's really hard to do, Jenna. I mean, I played 11 years in the National Football League. I made the playoffs with all 3 teams that I played for. I only played in 1 conference championship game. I only played in 1 Super Bowl. So when you have that opportunity to compete for championships, you got to take advantage of it because so much of it is just being able to stay healthy. A lot of it is playing well at the right time of the season. And it just feels like everything is falling into place for the Kansas City Chiefs. The injuries they had to deal with, that happened early on in the season. Yeah. Pat Mahomes, we all know about the ankle and the knee. They're not dealing with that right now, and they played really good football down the stretch. So you'd like to see them be able to finish the drill. And then, oh, by the way, Andy Reid, been in the NFL over 2 decades as a head coach. He has yet to win a championship. So you would like to see them take advantage of this opportunity just because they don't come too often.
It would be absolutely disappointing. And I think you made a point about the amount of the championship games you played in. The windows are always small. And if Patrick Mahomes thinks he is the best player in the league right now as far as a quarterback position, but if you think the best player just gets back to the Super Bowl every single year, you point yourself to Aaron Rodgers immediately. 1 Super Bowl 2010, hasn't been able to get back since, hasn't won one since. And so it
even happened. Dan Marino.
Yeah, it's hard to do that. And so when I think about it, would it be disappointing? Absolutely. I think that if they lose, that means Patrick Mahomes didn't have a great day. That also means that there are going to be questions about Andy Reid. Why didn't he develop a run game? Which way did he mess up the clock management? Those are questions that have lived with Andy Reid for a very long time.
You're already giving us the reasons why they wouldn't win.
Those would be the reasons why.
Unfortunately, they're true, yeah.
If they win, Patrick Mahomes had a great game. He dominated the game, and it's going to be clear. If they lose, there's some other things that have to be answered, and I think that's one of those things that when you talk about coaches, you always have to wonder, well, is he good enough to get over that edge? And I think Andy Reid is. This year will tell a lot.
Obviously, the Chiefs will be very disappointed if for the second straight year they're good enough to win a Super Bowl and they don't. Last year, they were good enough to win the Super Bowl. Like, especially when you saw the performance the Rams had prepared after 2 weeks getting ready for New England. Like, the Chiefs last year, Patrick, after a terrible first half in the AFC title game, Patrick Mahomes leads them down the field for a touchdown to take the lead against New England. Brady then answers after the D Ford offsides. Mahomes then gets the ball with less than a minute left, down 3. Drives him down the field again to get in field goal range. Kick a field goal, force overtime. Next time he touched the football was the preseason this year. You know, he never got back on the field. So your best opportunity last year, you feel like you were literally a coin flip away from maybe winning it last year. This year, it's not just that they dodged a Neo-style bullet. With the knee injury, how much good fortune did the Chiefs suffer, wrong word, but they benefit from, that they had nothing to do with? They are playing in the wild card round. If Ryan Tannehill does not drive the field against New England, they are going to have to go up against the last breaths of the Patriot dynasty if they are not beaten by the Tennessee Titans. Mm-hmm. They are then going to have to go up against the league MVP, the 14-2 Football Outsider says one of the 10 greatest teams ever, Lamar Jackson, Baltimore. If they're not beaten by the Titans, they didn't earn that, right? Now, I think they could have beaten any of those teams, but they wouldn't have been double-digit to touchdown favorites over both of those teams. They would have been an underdog in Baltimore if they had to play that game. So, yeah, you don't get there every year, and you might – Mahomes could go the rest of his career without having, in three consecutive weekends, someone else do something for him. Mm-hmm. The Dolphins take care of getting the bye. The Titans then, in two straight weeks, knock off teams that were better equipped to give the Chiefs problems than the ones they ended up having to face. So you got to cash in this opportunity, particularly because I think it will be – I don't know – 5 years, 6 years, maybe never before the Chiefs have as much raw talent as they have right now because that $40 million's coming from somewhere.
That's
now,
the big thing.
They're still going to have Tyreek. They're still going to have Kelsey. They'll still have Andy Reid. And they'll still, of course, have Patrick because he's the one getting the money. But somebody ain't going to be around or somebody's ain't going to be around once they have to pay Patrick.
Well, they have Sammy Watkins who went off last game. Well, you have
will.
The other guys
Correct.
That, you know, that's what makes the championships. You, of course, your main guys, Mahomes and Tyreek Hill and Kelsey, they're going to be a critical part of any team that they're on, especially for the Chiefs. But the other guys are the ones that are going to help you get there. Can they afford those guys once they pay Patrick Mahomes?
But as players, you're both smart enough to sit here and say it is real. You're both knew who Dan Marino was and what happened with Dan Marino. And I'm sure when you played, you understood. You get there, it's really hard to get back. But as a player, once you get that close, do you just feel, is it that you feel you'll be back, that you're good enough to be here now, that you'll no matter what, automatic, we're back next year? Because you get a sense that that's how players usually feel when they get to the Super Bowl.
Well, Jenna, Nick brought up the 2007 Giants Super Bowl run, and they came through the Dallas Cowboys in the divisional round. That year, we were 13-3. We had 15 Pro Bowlers, and we thought that we were going to build on the success that we had and eventually run it back. No, that didn't happen. Eventually, Wade Phillips got fired. Jason Garrett became the head coach, and the Dallas Cowboys never sniffed the NFC Championship game from that point on. So it's a situation where you just don't know. You have a collection of talent. You think that, you know, your window is wide open. You think that you can build on the success that you had in seasons prior to that, but it doesn't work like that in the NFL. Every single year, you're working to put your team back together. And Nick, you brought up the point about them having to pay the bill on Pat Mahomes. You're going to lose a lot of pieces, and I know people will probably point to the defensive side of the ball in terms of some of the guys that you would probably like to keep around. You're not going to be able to afford to keep around. So I think that leaves a lot of work for Brett Veach, their general manager, to work out. But I do like the infrastructure in Kansas City between their general manager and their head coach. They have a synergy working together. So I do think that they'll have opportunities to compete for championships even beyond this year. It's just that it's not a guarantee.
The best team every year doesn't win. Sometimes the best team loses, and so even though
the best collection of talent every year doesn't
always
win, but the best team always wins.
Guys, a little in or out. Here we go. After 16 seasons and two Super Bowl MVPs, Giants quarterback Eli Manning will announce his retirement at a press conference tomorrow. Brian Westbrook, you in or out on Eli being a Hall of Famer?
I'm in. I think Eli has a longevity, 16 years. I think the numbers, over 50,000 yards, over 300 touchdowns, say that he's a Hall of Famer. He wasn't the best he had in any single year. But when you talk about a collection of a career, which makes a Hall of Famer, I think Eli, his numbers speak for themselves.
Yeah, Eli Manning's a Hall of Famer. I think he's a lock. I mean, I mentioned it before. Only five guys with multiple Super Bowl MVPs. Joe Montana, Bart Starr, Terry Bradshaw in Canton. Tom Brady will be in Canton. And then Eli Manning's name is on that list.
Listen, I have been on the fence on this for a long time, but once he retired, I knew I was going to have to come up with my actual opinion on it. So after doing probably more time thinking about this and looking at the numbers than I should, he's a Hall of Famer. That it is, you can, if you just base it on regular season numbers, you can make a very strong case for him because of the totality of the numbers, but you can also make a very strong case against him because he was never one of the three, maybe never even one of the five best quarterbacks in any given season. However, not just these two games against the Patriots, but the eight playoff games and those playoff runs where he had 15 touchdowns, two picks, a 101 rating despite being the underdog in damn near every one of those games, that's enough to put you over the top. And I give him a little extra credit. Archie's kid, Peyton's little brother, and didn't let that crush him. That would have crushed a lot of people, especially in New York City. He lived up to it. Hall of Famer.
Stuff. All right, Lamar Jackson might win MVP honors this season, but he isn't satisfied, saying, quote, I got to work on everything. I'm not the best. I'm not the greatest. Brian Westbrook, you in or out on Lamar making a leap as a passer from year two to year three?
I'm in. In any part of your life, the first part of getting better is admitting that you need to get better. Lamar Jackson has just said, I want to be a better passer. He got much better from last year to this year. To me, that doesn't change. He continues to progress and get better. Humble kid. Every single step of the way, he's saying the right thing. He's doing the right thing in the offseason. I think he makes a big jump from year two to three.
Yeah, B-Dub, I'm right there on that corner with you. Seeing what he did from year one to year two, I think that displays his sports character, and I believe he'll continue to work on his game and try to improve in the areas that he has deficiencies. I don't have any question that Lamar will do his part. The organization has got to do their part, and eventually they're going to have to win one of these playoff games where he's the starting quarterback.
Well, and he's going to play better in those one of those playoff games for them to win. I'm out on him making a leap. I think the leap portion of his career was year one to year two. I think he'll improve slightly. I think we're now to the gradient improvements, which is why I think it'll be a few years until Lamar is a truly accurate deep down the field passer. My guess is around the time that some of his athleticism wanes a bit, he overcomes it because his passing has become more refined enough. He's not a bad passer, but to me a leap would be, okay, he's not only the most deadly running quarterback, but he's also one of the most deadly passing quarterbacks. He's not that, and I don't think he'll be that in year three.
All right, Stephen Jones says that Dak Prescott's contract is the team's number one priority this offseason, but there is a second option. So, Westbrook, you in or out on the Cowboys using the franchise tag on Dak Prescott?
I'm out. I think you add Mike McCarthy because you have faith in his ability to say he's going to make this team better. He's going to be able to improve Dak. I wish I had the numbers in front of me. How many teams have won with a quarterback on a franchise tag? I would probably think it's been very low. I want to make
won
sure.
Won a Super Bowl?
Yeah, won a Super Bowl. Won some playoff games. Won something that counts for anything. Yep. And this is that's the reason why I'm saying you got to pay the man and allow your team to move on. If you want to make this team better, you either got to pay him or move him out of there. But you get someone else in. Don't mess around with the franchise tag.
Yeah, I'm out on the Cowboys franchise tag and Dak. They need to get a long-term deal worked out because they need to be able to manipulate the cap and spread some of the cap hit with the new extension that Dak Prescott is going to command. Because we came into last year saying the Cowboys were one of the most talented teams in the NFL. But when you have a talented team, of course, you got to pay all of those guys. And in order to keep those guys around for this 2 or 3 year window, you got to be able to spread that cap hit out. Franchise tag doesn't allow you to do that. That's $27, $28 million on your cap in 2020. Yep. And that makes it a lot harder to work out extensions for Cooper and for Byron Jones.
I'm in, despite Canny's totally correct, that there's no way to manipulate the cap in the front. Whatever that tag number is that hits your cap that year, he's absolutely right. I would rather swallow that pill than pay Dak what it looks like it is going to take to get him to sign a contract. Dak has made it very clear. He wasn't taking any type of discount. Looks like he wants to be one of the three highest paid players in football history. I think that would be a mistake. I would rather roll the dice with the franchise tag, see how he plays under McCarthy. See, the Jason Garrett excuse, I don't know if that was an excuse, but the Jason Garrett place to put the blame is now gone. If Dak and the Cowboys aren't much better next year, then you do start to look to the quarterback. I'd want the flexibility in case that happens, so I'm in on it.
By the way, Kirk Cousins missed the playoffs when he had the franchise tag on him those 2 years. He had made it the year prior when he was in Washington. Last night, we finally got the debut of 19-year-old phenom, projected superstar Zion Williamson. And after a very quiet first three quarters, he scored 17 straight points during a 3-minute span in the fourth. He was then pulled with just over 5 minutes left in the game because he was on a minutes restriction. Pelicans would go on to lose to the Spurs. Here's Zion after the game on getting pulled.
It's very hard. I'm 19, honestly. In that moment, I'm not thinking about longevity. I'm thinking about winning that game. So it was very tough. Me personally, I didn't want any restriction, but I'm not a doctor or a trainer, so I just got to listen to them.
Nick, do you think injuries are the only thing that can really keep Zion from being a Hall of Fame talent?
Oh, yeah, I'll take a step further. Injuries are the only thing that will keep him from being an all-timer. And the NBA is a little different than the NFL. The NFL, if you are in the Hall of Fame, you are an all-timer.
Yeah.
The NBA, all the players in the Hall of Fame are great, but there is a separate wing, at least in my brain, of the greatest of the great. Remember the NBA old top 50 list? I think they're going to come out with a 75th anniversary top 75 list. There are a lot of guys not included in that are in the Hall of Fame. Zion can be in one of those front rooms of that pyramid if he stays healthy. His floor is Blake Griffin. And I like Blake a lot. Blake has had an awesome career. Blake Griffin will be a Hall of Famer. That is not an insult to Blake. His ceiling is win a couple of MVPs. He showed you last night, Brian, that I like that he made threes. I don't think he's going to be some knockdown shooter his rookie season. But what he showed you last night by taking those threes, by having the presence of the moment, was that, he also has that thing that I thought he had at Duke. I had every reason to believe he had at Duke, but it's college, so it's a little different, which is a feeling of the moment and what the greatest of the great have, which is, it's my time. And this is a big moment for me, so I need to live up to the quality of the moment for me. I watched Kevin Durant in his final game ever in Seattle, his rookie season. People forget, Durant was drafted by the Seattle Supersonics around the age Zion was, 1 year in college. And you saw him have this unbelievable career at the University of Texas. And the fans were, if I'm remembering it exactly correct, they were trailing in the fourth quarter. The fans were upset because the team's leaving. And KD, as a 19-year-old kid, not only channels the moment, but gets the crowd involved, hits big shots, doing the Save Our Sonics thing. And in that moment, I'm like, this guy, in addition to having all the tools he had, he's special. And Zion took him 14 minutes to figure it out. And then in that burst in the fourth quarter, it's like, okay, everything I wanted to believe about him, to me, he confirmed last night. The only thing that can derail him is injuries, which is why the knee was so concerning when it happened before the year even started. But, I mean, he checks every box you want for the next great NBA superstar.
One of the things I hate about our superstars, and this is our business that we're in, is that we're trying to put this guy that's played one game in his professional career in the Hall of Fame box already. And I think when you talk about his talent, you talk about how exciting, how athletic, the smile, how charismatic he is. Obviously, he has the ability to make it to the Hall of Fame. He has a long way to go. Here's a couple things that I loved about what happened last night and to kind of show. First, he said, Canty mentioned it earlier, after the game, I love what I was able to do, but I wanted to win the game. That's the most important thing. The second thing is that he has a bunch of vets around him that are vested in him maturing and be better because they understand, even though Ingram has been going off, even though Ball has played very well, Drew Holiday has done a great job, they understand if this guy gets on the right track, then this team goes to the next level, competes for that 8th seed, maybe the 7th seed in their conference. And the last thing was, when they're at that press conference, there was a reason why Drew Holiday was sitting beside Zion.
Yes.
Because he wanted to make sure that this 19-year-old was leading and going in the right direction. When you have vets that kind of want to shape your future and you are as athletic and exciting as he is, it's hard to not be on that same type of Hall of Fame pathway that I think he is on already.
And I think the NBA needed an injection of someone like Zion this season. We don't have the exact same storylines we had last year. He is all of that wrapped up in one, as you said, charismatic individual. It's must-see TV. You're going to watch him play.
And two other notes quickly. One is this. I understand basketball analytics as well as just about anybody. I get why the game has become three-pointers and layups, why the mid-range game is gone, why you are incentivized to find the next Steph Curry more so than just about anything else. I get it. it ain't great for the game. What makes basketball so aesthetically appealing and the most beautiful game of all the games to me, as far as just watching it from afar, is you've got this almost ballet going on with freak show athletes. We needed another freak show athlete in this league. We needed another guy who's not only bigger and stronger and who is that, but can jump higher. The ability to momentarily fly is what differentiates basketball players from all the other sports. And it doesn't make them better or worse, it's just different. And the league has incentivized finding guys who can shoot from 35 feet. And I love Trey. And Luke is obviously my young adult Slovenian son. I love their games. They can't get you out your seat the way this kid's going to be able to. And I know it's premature, and we always want to say, is Patrick Mahomes a Hall of Famer? Is this guy? In basketball, you can sometimes see it when they're 17.
Yeah.
And because there's less of a risk of catastrophic injury than football, you're less dependent on your teammates than in football. Guys that are 99 out of 100 on potential, usually, occasionally there's a Derek Coleman, usually they hit. And I can't wait to watch him. I can't wait to watch him fly up and down the court, almost literally.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern.